Hi, my name is Queen and I go by the name Queen the Empowerer. And you're watching the Mobilize Podcast.
Can it be done in water? Everything we are is water. And water is life.
They'll drink that water but get sick. They don't actually know what causes the disease.
In South African terms, it's to see if there's little chachas in your water that'll make you sick.
You fix the problem, you move away, then back to square one.
As we speak, Joburg Water does not have money to pay their contractors.
Welcome to the Mobilize Podcast. My name is Queen and I go by the name Queen the Empowerer. And on today's topic, we are discussing something you know, something you love, and something we need to survive. Although lately it has been a thought-provoking topic, we are discussing water. And in studio, I am joined by prestigious guest. I am joined by the ever awesome Dr. Ferial Adams. I'll tell you the story behind the name later on. She holds a PhD in environmental justice, and she's been championing this environmental justice work for over 20 years. And also, I am also joined by Miss Nomsa Daeli. The whole time we've been mispronouncing the names, and that's why I'm saying very important that I pronounce them appropriately. So it is Miss Nomsa Daeli, who is the senior team leader at What I Can. And I am so excited to have these ladies join us today in studio. Ladies, welcome to the Mobilize Podcast. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, I am excited. I am excited. Have you had your water this morning?
Yes.
You absolutely did. So let's get into it, ladies. But let's start on a cooler note, on a chilled note, because, you know, with people like you who hold prestigious titles like being a doctor, an environmental justice champion, being a senior team leader, you know, at such a big institution, people want to get to know you personally, so that those who aspire to get to where you are, they just want to know who you are. Maybe let's start with you, doctor. Just let us know who you are.
Sure. Well, I think I do describe myself as an activist. I've been an activist my entire life, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I love life. I love the work that I do. I'm the youngest in a big family. And I love cats.
Oh, nice.
Yes. They're my friends. And yeah, that's in a nutshell who I am. I think I found my pathway to Water Can I wouldn't say accidentally, but quite an interesting pathway.
Okay, that is fair enough, but I think I will still like to dig in a little deeper. I know you've got more to the story, but let's go over to you, Ms. Daeli.
Nomsa Daeli.
Nomsa Daeli.
Daeli. I'm working with Dr. Ferial, as you introduce yourself. So I am a training coordinator for Water Can. I think I'll also say I'm an activist. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, I had a dream once. Someone was asking you, who are you? And I said, I'm Nomsa, I'm an activist. I never told you about that.
Tell me that.
I'm an activist. I'm a mother.
Mm-hmm.
I think I found my way to Water Can through Outer. I used to do a lot of queries for Dr. Ferial. And that's how I got interested in the water industry.
It's so funny. She's calling me Dr. Ferial.
But usually she just calls you by name.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what happens when we're in podcasts and we have mics and everything. And I love that you're both mentioning your journey towards Water Can, because I'm really interested in learning, like, what led you into it. Like, when we look back when you were a youth, what are some of the things that led you? I know she mentioned a dream, but the activism work as well. What happened? Was there a point in time in your life where you like reflected and was like, you know what, I need to bring about change in this country of South Africa?
So I know I don't look it. I'm just being, but I grew up under apartheid. And so my family, I mean, as I said, I'm one of many siblings and the youngest. And so we were politicized very early on in our lives, and our parents supported it. So I was 12 when I had my first whiff of tear gas.
Oh, no.
And running around and being chased by cops. And it was a turning point because my older siblings, my parents were involved, my parents were helping. And so it was almost a natural progression, but the understanding that this system we lived under made you an other, depending on the color of your skin. And within that also created further divisions. And that irritated me.
At what ages?
I was 12 when I, I said to you, my first meeting, I was 11. And it happened by accident. I was 11. My older sister, at the time, she was 17. And she was going to a meeting. It was then what we would call Women's Day meeting. It was not a public holiday. We would celebrate August 9th. And her friends came to fetch her. And they said, do you want to come? And I was like, yo, the big guys are asking me to go with them. Little did I know.
Yeah.
And I went along to the meeting and I met amazing people. And I listened to these speeches about women. And I was completely blown away. And I thought, this is right. I believe everything that they're saying. And I never look back. And I spent my entire teenage years doing door-to-door work.
Wow. That is so encouraging and interesting that you can actually start that young. Because, you know, people think the activism world just starts when you're like 30 or 45. But I mean, even somebody, a parent listening with the child can be inspired to say, actually, we need to start being conscientized of real life issues at a younger age. So you mentioned something around you had a dream. At what age did you have this dream?
It was now recently.
Oh, actually. Okay.
Oh, my word.
It was now recently.
So any history of when the activism bug hit you? Were you around your youth? That's where I'm more interested in.
No, I was not around my youth.
Yeah.
I think it was about 4 years ago when I started learning about... I met Dr. Farrell at... Oh, sorry, Farrell.
Periel.
So I think when I first met her, she used to be a board, and then she introduced herself to me. That's when I started Googling her.
Okay.
And then I became more interested.
The same people, yeah. They interview.
I started Googling the work that she does. And then that's how I became interested. I think that's how, when I joined WaterCan, I started being an activist. But I think I grew up with a concern around water as well, because when I go home, my home is in the Northwest. When we are that side, we don't have access to water. But when we do, the water doesn't taste nice. Or the little kids would have runny tummies. So at that age, when I was young, I didn't know there's something that we can actually do up until I joined WaterCan and became an activist.
Oh, that is beautiful. I love the fact that your ages are not like in the same way, because we also don't want to discourage somebody who's at home watching. Perhaps they're in their 40s or 50s and they're like, it's perhaps too late for me. I mean, doctor started when she was only 11. What can I do now? It's never too late to actually do the right thing. And I love that. So like I said, that I wanted to start it on a chilled note. We just also want to know, what is it that you like doing outside your field of research? I know you mentioned you liked cats. What else that is relatable to somebody who's watching, an ordinary person that's watching? What is it that you like? Nomsa, let's start with you this time.
I love cooking.
Oh, yay.
I love cooking. I love trying out different receipts. So, yeah, if I see something on TikTok or on Facebook that I've never tried, I'll try that. That's one thing I like.
It's very scary to cook for Nomsa. She's Is like it? A foodie.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It's like you're giving someone and she's going to, like, judge you.
It's shame.
No, she'll say, no, this is very spicy. But when I taste, I'm like, Phil, it's not hot enough for me.
Okay, so self-taught chef, then we'll give you that. What do you like do?
So I do different things. I like to run. I like to hike.
Your body says it all. And I love it.
Thank you. And I like to dance.
Oh, nice. We have something in common. I love to dance too.
She likes music.
Yeah, I love music. Okay. I used to teach ballroom and Latin dance. I love salsa because of my time in Mexico. And yeah, outdoors. The more outdoors I can be, the happier I am.
Okay.
I cannot cook.
Okay.
She's not bad.
Edit that out. But anyways, speaking of water can, you've mentioned it so many times. Can you elaborate on how you came to be a part of this beautiful project?
I think, as I said earlier, I used to work mostly with supporter queries. So people would call in to complain about certain things, or maybe if they need...
Pardon, you used to work with?
I used to be a supporter relation, so that's like customer care. So we would get incoming calls or we'd get emails. Mm-hmm. So I would get a lot of emails regarding sewage or contaminated water. Mm-hmm. And I would forward those emails to Ferio.
Mm-hmm.
And she would respond. So sometimes she would CC me on the emails. So that's how I got interested in water can. And she needed an assistant. And I was like, I'm here.
What?
That's how
Look
I joined
at
what
the
I can.
Universe, yeah. Responding so beautifully, like somebody responding an email. So yes, somebody was responding to your emails. How did you become a part of this beautiful program?
So I have to take it back to my earlier years working for an organization on environmental justice. Now, my background's in science,
mm-hmm.
and I was working with this community group or this NGO that was looking at air pollution specifically. And they had this idea of using a bucket, specialized bags, and a bicycle pump. And they would do these air sampling in areas of high pollution. And for me, the scientists in me were like, this is really not going to work, you know? One of the first meetings was with the community people and the companies, the two companies, which is Sasol and ArcelorMittal.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in the Val. And they were complaining about the pollution. And the people were, this was before they did the studies, people were saying, but, you know, we're breathing in bad air, we're feeling ill, mm-hmm. we're having headaches. And those companies said, no, it's not us, it's you. You are burning, so they blame the community. You are burning home fires. So this is your fault.
Okay.
That's what you're experiencing. So then there was this testing with the bucket and the bicycle pump. And I thought, no, really? And with the NGO, they sent these bags to a specialized lab. So they got these analyses and they had another meeting with the companies, and the companies were still saying, no, it's not us, it's you.
Mm.
But with the results, they could show that the pollutants that they picked up could only come from industrial pollution. So for me, that was like, we can make a difference on the ground. We can do this. And so from then, and that I think was 20 years ago, where I was, can it be done in water? Mm. Water's always been my passion. Mm. And for years, I didn't think it could be done in water. And then I did my PhD on something called citizen science.
Yes.
And environmental justice in the water sector.
Mm.
And there it was that, you know, we could get testing kits that you could do at home.
Mm.
And you could check your quality of your water and figure out your drinking water quality. So that's what I studied. I was on the board of the organization Undoing Tax Abuse. And I resigned because I needed to do my write-up of my PhD.
Okay.
So they kind of wanted to know what my PhD was about. And then I explained. And I think they thought about it. And the next thing they knew that they were talking to me about, listen, there's a gap in the work we're doing on water. Are you keen? And then we sat together and we kind of...
Was this with WaterCan?
It was with Outer. Brainstormed the whole idea of WaterCan. That's where even we said, what shall we call it?
Mm.
And we said, let's call it WaterCan. It's a play on a jug as well as its Water Community Action Network.
Oh, it's an acronym.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting. And also, you mentioned your personal history. You even went as far as the apartheid system in South Africa. You also mentioned you staying in the Northwest and how you saw how water affected people like children. So if you can elaborate just personally why water research is so important to you? And I think I just want to start with you, Doctor, on this one. Okay.
So I think that, you know, you said it in the introduction very nicely, is that everything we are is water, and water is life.
Mm.
So that's the first part of, if you're having bad water, you could die. There's over 800,000 people globally that die every year because of drinking water polluted with sewage.
Over 8,000.
800,000.
800,000.
Yes. So when you think about it that way, where everybody on earth should have enough water to live, it's a human right. It's recognized as such. The fact that so many people are still dying, and in South Africa, we're getting there. People are not able to access clean, safe drinking water. And that is why it's so important for us to do the work we're doing. Also, we're a small organization. We don't have eyes everywhere in South Africa.
Mm.
But with this testing kit, people can call us, they get a testing kit, they can then be the monitors where they are.
Mm.
It can be rural KZN or Northern Cape or the cities. People can themselves become owners and monitor their own water. That's why for me, this is so powerful.
All right. And Nomsa, you mentioned something around young kids drinking water, you know, and having runny tummy as a mother and as a person. Why is the research so important to you?
I think it will raise awareness and knowledge as well, because you'll get people from rural areas and communities that actually drink this water and they get sick from it.
Mm.
But the illness as well, for saying people are getting sick. You find that people from rural areas or like my hometown in Mafikeng, they'll drink that water, but get sick, they don't actually know what causes the disease. For example, having your runny tummy or skin diseases, that is also, water can cause those kind of disease or infection. So I think people need to do research for awareness as well as to know what's in their water as well.
Mm. So you are very big on educating and informing others about this. Okay, very interesting. But also, I think if you can just elaborate on this one I'm going to take it to as a mother, like a 5-year-old, explaining to a 5-year-old what water can is and what role you play. And you also explain the same.
Okay. So water can for a 5-year-old. Okay. I have a 4-year-old. Let me explain.
I like the can. The
I'm explaining to Lutando.
Yes.
Yes. Lutando would be like, hey, Nomsa.
Lutando is your daughter?
My son.
Your son.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think I'll explain to Lutando. I'll say, so we deal with water quality.
Right.
We make sure that people also have access to clean, drinkable water.
Right.
By doing that, we provide them with testing kits so that they can monitor what's in their water. Not only that, we also assist. We are the voice for the voiceless as well.
Mm.
We guide people on what to do if they find that their water is contaminated.
You are indeed the voice to the voiceless, because I've heard when a lot of times in your speeches, you really, really mention the marginalized. You keep saying the rural areas. So it's not just like a Joburg thing or a city thing.
Yes.
So yeah, I fully agree with you on that one. And also, as you explain, I'd like you to repeat the acronym so that we get it.
Okay. So it's Community Action Network.
Community Action Network.
Trying to build a network of active citizen science activists.
Okay. And your role there is?
So our role is to build awareness, is to train people how to use the testing kit, and to be able to give people the understanding of the science.
Mm.
So the thing about science is that, and that's important, because when I came out of varsity, I had this like, oh, science, you know, there's this almost snobbiness around science, but everybody should have an understanding of science and do have an understanding of science. Your entire life is about science, but because it's been corporatized, because it's like it's being owned, it blocks out people and it doesn't allow them to have access. And what that does then, it blocks people from ordinary knowledge. Let me give you an example. When you're dealing with elderly people in say, for example, parts of South Africa, where we know that their education was not great because we're looking at South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So their numeracy, their literacy is not as great, right?
Under education.
Exactly. So when you start, and I remember a good example, while I was doing my PhD, I was interviewing people as part of my thesis, right? And my question would always be, because he was looking at citizen science, I would always start with saying, so what do you think about science, to try and get an understanding? And I remember one young woman said to me, no, please don't talk to me about science. If you're going to ask me about science, I can't do this interview. And I said to her, okay, no, wait, it's not dependent on that question. I'm sorry. Relax. Tell me what you do. It was so amazing. She is a small scale farmer. Okay. And I said, okay, what does that mean? So she said, no, we prepare the land. I said, how do you prepare the land? And she described what she does. They take 2-liter cold drink bottles. They would take core samples from four corners of the land and the center. They'll take the cores, they'll put in like, she was telling me this. She said, you know, like we'd use a core, which is like a big straw.
Mm-hmm.
And put it into the ground and then you pull out the soil and you put it into the bottle.
And that sounds like they're in a lab.
Right? So she will do that on all four corners and the center.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually mapping out
the
soil. And you then fill it with water and you leave it for a couple of hours to settle. When it settles, you can then go and look at the bottle and you can see the different types of soil you have.
How intelligent.
When you have the different types of soil, you know what to plant. This soil, you can grow potatoes. That soil, you can grow spinach. She was telling me all of this and I just...
And you are the PhD student.
Well, I was the student. Okay, I'm not an agricultural student, but she's the one that said, no, don't talk to me about science. But she knows science. That's all science.
Yeah.
So that's the issue about knowledge, is that it creates a blockage because people think they don't know, but they do. So when you ask me about the Community Action Network, it's about building that. So we work with people to say, we're empowering with water knowledge. We train you to use the testing kit. Go out and test. You analyze. You then decide what you want to do with the results. So we don't take away the agency. And we do this across the country. And that is why the action network for us is important. And it's community led. They will say to me, okay, we are going to do door to door. We don't impose, they do it. We need a leaflet. We need it in Zulu, isiZulu. We need it in isiSuthu, whatever they want, or Sesotho. Like, she's my teacher. So we do all of those kind of things depending, and they will translate it. They will tell us what they want on the leaflet. And that's what empowering is about.
It really indeed is, because based on what you're saying, you are showing me how intelligent South Africans actually are. And perhaps the jargon sometimes is what gets in the way. But when we have people like you who make people aware and realize that, no, actually you are smarter than we think, that's where these conversations become easier, when we make people aware of how valuable they are, what the work they are doing is much appreciated, you know. And because you've mentioned that you studied citizen science, just back to you again, can you just explain what citizen science is in layman's terms?
Okay, so like I said to you, science as a whole, as a sector, has been corporatized. So you have to go to university or a technicon. You know, it's very specialized, okay, and understood. But then it blocks out people of knowledge. It blocks people getting involved in it. So for a long time, people knew that their water wasn't right, that people were getting sick, but they didn't think they could do anything about it. So you go to government and you say, there's something wrong with our water. They'll be like, no, it's not your water. You're not washing your vegetables. It's you. You're not clean. That's what's kind of happening. So citizen science is about ordinary people doing science to further their struggles, whether it's environmental, whether it's service delivery, whether it's health or food. So you can use it. It's not a, it's been around for like I would say many decades now. From simple things, let me give you examples of citizen science that you would know.
Yeah.
Bird watching.
Okay.
So people watch, they'll go out and they'll bird watch, they'll document it, they'll send it to they'll email it to a center, and they'd be able to track the birds, the number of birds. They might even spot birds that are supposed to be endangered in an area. So that is what bird watchers do. Mm. Astronomers. You get the amateur astronomers who would, you know, there are people who have found stars that, or named stars after themselves because they discovered them. So it can be from astronomy to food, a whole range. It's not specific to water only.
Mm.
It's about people who do not have the qualifications doing particular things within that sector, whether it's growing organic food. You know, all of those kind of things fall into where ordinary people can do is citizen science.
Mm-hmm. So, Sis Noms, I'm coming back to you. Mm-hmm. Because we spoke about how jargon can be, you know, a barrier to communicating with ordinary citizens. What is microbiological compliance in simpler terms? Or perhaps the other name I was struggling with was turbidity. Are those terms that you're familiar with?
Also. So turbidity is very simple. Turbidity is the clarity of your water.
Okay.
So if you pick up your glass of water, it should not have things swimming in it. It shouldn't be brown.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's fine. It's clear, right?
So this doesn't need a testing kit.
You can In fact, it's really interesting that you have this because there is something that can be used where there's a table that can be used with using these kind of black and white squares at the bottom. If you can see them, you can give it a scale, and then that gives you your turbidity. Microbiological studies is basically checking your water tests for bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So, which I think then you can ask Nomsa about the tests that she's been doing specifically on that. Mm-hmm. So if you want to explain that to simple people or to five-year-olds, is to say, in South African terms, it's to see if there's little chochas in your water that will make you sick.
Mm. Okay, then over to you. You can explain further.
So that would be the bacteria that you find in your water, your E. coli. Mm. That is, you're not supposed to have E. coli in your water, especially your drinking water. But I think in your rivers and your dams because of pollution.
Did you say E. coli?
Yes.
What is it that... filthy, like type of, what is it? What is E. coli?
E. coli.
E. coli.
E. coli. What is that?
Well, it's mostly from the human gut or from animals.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's bacteria.
It's bacteria.
It's in your gut.
It's in your gut.
So it's basically sewage.
Sewage.
Okay. So anything on microbiological compliance?
So microbiological compliance is basically your water should not have any bacteria, E. coli in it, or total coliform bacteria.
Okay.
So that is what microbiological compliance is that within the standards we have for our drinking water, it's set according to SANS 241, which is the South African National Standards 241, which stipulates the quantities of what you're supposed to have in your water. So how, like it will even, like, for chlorine and calcium and magnesium, and then also your bacterial components. What are the acceptable levels? And for drinking water, it must be zero.
Okay. Actually, we've started on a high note. I thought we were going to like go slowly into it, but we've already dived into it. But I just want to get a background on our water journey. I know I was thinking about the other day I was visiting the Vaal River. Growing up, when we were still in school, our toilets used to be written like Vaal. To show that the water in Joburg is from the Vaal River. So when I was there, I literally thanked the Vaal River. I'm like, thank you for giving me life for all these years. But what is the water journey that you can share with us from the source of water to our taps, to our toilets? What is the journey like? Anyone can go for it.
So your journey, actually, you should go to Lesotho and thank the Lesotho country for the kingdom.
Well, one of my destinations that I'd like to visit. Really, it's beautiful. Is Lesotho.
So Lesotho, it's really beautiful. Mm. Family there. But my point is, our water comes from the Lesotho Highlands Water Project. It flows into the Vaal River system. Now, the Vaal River system is the integrated Vaal River system is more than just the Vaal Dam. There are a few dams. It's a whole interconnected system that then feeds different provinces.
Yeah.
So Rand Water, as your bulk water supplier,
mm-hmm.
that means it's the big company that will abstract the water from the Vaal, clean that water, okay, and they sell it to four provinces. Gauteng, Free State, parts of Mpumalanga and parts of Northwest.
Okay.
I think. And they then sell it to the municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Johannesburg, they will sell it to the city of Joburg. And the city of Joburg has Joburg Water as their entity that then will send it to our pipes, our taps, our toilets, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the journey.
Yeah. When I was in Bloemfontein, I came from Bloemfontein this week for training. They mentioned that their municipality get water from, like you're saying, Rand Water, but they're saying they're getting water from a company called MAP Water. So I asked, is MAP Water like Rand Water? And they said, yes. But MAP Water doesn't clean their water properly.
Mm. So we must check it out.
Yeah.
Mm. And it actually leads me to the question that follows this one, which is, seeing that you are so well-traveled and you know about the provinces in South Africa, what are some of the issues that are in these provinces with regards to water? You can even be go as far as being specific and say, actually, in KZN, this is what we discovered that is different from the Free State of different from Limpopo. I know there was a time actually where I was visiting Limpopo. There's a small rural area that's called Denelton Mdeti. It was previously under the municipality of Mpumalanga, and then it was moved to Limpopo. As soon as it was moved to Limpopo, then there were problems with access of water. So you can tell that with province to province, yes, we have water issues, but they're not like the same.
I think I'll name a few that I think I'm familiar with from the people that I've been working with. I think in Joburg, it would be the infrastructure, poor infrastructure. In Bloemfontein, there's a lot of agriculture there. So agriculture and mines are contaminating their water. With Cape Town, I think they're still recovering from day zero because their water is not, they're paying even for, because I know with the schools, kids have to bring 5 rand. It's included in the school every year, January.
Outside the school fees?
Yes. So okay. Kids have to bring a 20 liter of water or a 5 liter. If they don't do that, you need to bring 5 rand to pay for water at school. So those
and also
are
the sewage.
The sewage as well. Yeah, it's really bad.
So if you think about beaches.
Yeah, I think Northern Cape or Eastern Cape, they're still struggling with drought. There's a lot of drought in that province. KZN, there's a lot of water shedding because of the rain as well as the infrastructure as well.
And I think umbrella of all of this is inefficient municipalities and corruption.
Yes, because it is the water problem really is interlinked with the infrastructure problem.
Yeah, and I think NAMSA does a lot of the work with the community groups. I mean, the story of KZN with the Right to Know campaign,
yes,
which is a story you can talk about, and also your school project. I mean, I think is important to share. Your actual examples of what you've been doing.
Yes. So in KZN, there's a community. I forgot the name, but they had been struggling with water for years. They have taps in their yards, but the taps are dry, so they don't have water. But they have a stream that's nearby. So what they do is they collect water from that stream, and kids get sick from drinking that water. So they use that water for drinking, for cleaning, for doing their laundry as well. So there's an organization called Right to Know. They approached us and asked for testing kits. We provided them with a water can testing kits.
Mm-hmm.
They tested their water, only to find out there's E. coli and coliform in the water. Mm-hmm. So this went to the media, and municipality responded, saying no, they will assist them with water. Just in a few days, there were JoJo tanks that they were provided with from the municipality. Not only that, they had running water in the taps.
Oh, wow.
After years of struggling with water. But after a few weeks, the taps were dry again. And we also have a project that we normally do in March, World Water Day in March. It's normally around the 21st or the 22nd of every year. So this year we had 95 schools in five provinces that participated with the testing. So this is school kids and teachers that were testing the waters from the school. It's either from a tap or from a JoJo tank. Mm-hmm. And from a borehole. So we don't recommend that they test their borehole because they need to do a lab test. But they tested, and we also found that 40%, 46% of the schools, their water were contaminated with E. coli. So it was not good for consumption.
And I was about to like get excited and congratulate you when you mentioned that after the media came through, then there were JoJo tanks, until you mentioned the part where it's like if you fix a problem, you move away, then back to square one, where you then realize that, you know, the support that you need, you're not getting enough of it, which is really worrisome. But it's great work that you're doing. Let's not take that lightly.
No, for sure. But I think that what we realize, and that's why our model is slightly changing, is that if you build the network on the ground at that community, then there's a bigger push from the, so when things stop, we find that the group that we're working with, if it's localized, will continue the fight.
Oh,
but on this one, it was, you know, it was very rural, it was very difficult, and mostly elderly people, so it's difficult to kind of get kind of the activism going. And right to know, we're in Durban eThekwini, so not based there, but in the areas where we're working, where there are local groups like Bekkersdal or Claremont, we can step back and they still push. They be like, no, you promised this on this date, but now you haven't responded. Or Mpumalanga, Carolina. You know, there are groups there that have been working for years on environmental justice in Carolina, and they so good. We learn from them. So if you have, that's why we try to build a community action network. So if there are people within an area that can spearhead the campaign, it's more powerful.
And I also would like to commend you on your communication with the communities that you help. The mere fact that after leaving, you still are able to get feedback, even in communities where people aren't as strong when it comes to activism, shows the hard work that you are putting into this. And I think later on, we will maybe speak about how can people who are perhaps watching can be a part of Water Can in different communities. But you did not mention much about Gauteng. You know, a lot of people think everything is great in Gauteng, and on the contrary, we do also have some water issues. I mean,
some.
I like the fact you corrected me. You know, we have water issues. I mean, we've also been introduced to this water shedding thing that, you know, is so absurd. Any issues around Gauteng?
A lot.
That you can speak from the top of your head.
I think Gauteng, particularly city of Joburg, is a snapshot of what is going on in the rest of the country times 10. So what we're experiencing as a city should not be, you know, it should not be the case. But I think that if we look at South Africa as a whole, the cities, all the cities have been having issues around water for a number of years now. It's not new. But it's hit Joburg. And because Joburg is the economic hub, there's a lot of focus on it. And also Joburg is, we don't take things lightly. We don't sit back. We're a very vibrant city. And we're very vocal. You know, someone irritates you, someone just tell them off. Yes.
Everything is.
Yeah. So in Johannesburg, what we have is a combination of old infrastructure. We have a lot of, half of our reservoirs are leaking. We need to replace at least 100 kilometers of water pipes a year, not only sanitation, but water as well. And we're only managing about 14 to 17 kilometers a year because of the budget. We are presently organizing a protest on the 1st of November outside the city council chambers because we think that the buck stops with the mayor. People point fingers at Joburg Water. I've been, you know, we've been in touch with Joburg Water. We've seen the work that they've done. They've responded when they can. But at the moment, as we speak, Joburg Water does not have money to pay their contractors. So work stops. Simple jobs that needs one tractor with a digger, takes 2 weeks instead of 2 days because they cannot pay the contractor to bring the tractor out. So these are the kinds of challenges they have, and they want to get things done. But within the municipality, there's the movement of money. Now, there's this thing called sweeping of funds.
Mm.
National Treasury allows municipalities to move funds into one account for 24 hours so that they can gain some kind of interest, but it must be returned. 4 billion rand has been moved from Joburg Water's account over 2 financial years. And it has not been put back. So we're not saying it's stolen. Because the mayor keeps saying, oh, we didn't steal money. Yeah, we know. But tell us what you did with it.
Yeah.
Just show us.
Yeah.
Show us what you've done with it. If you say you've used it for contingency for other parts of the city, great. Let us see it. It's not being seen. We think City Power is sucking the city dry at the moment with their costs and their budget. So we saying, as WaterCan, if we don't fix our water systems, everything else is going to fall apart. Schools, hospitals, people's livelihoods, already jobs are being lost because of no water. It's not the same like electricity where people can put up generators and solar power and go off grid. It's not the same.
It's way deeper.
Water is water. There's no alternative.
That's true.
Right?
That is so true.
So we are saying to the city of Joburg, we're saying to Joburgers, like, you need to keep pushing. You need to keep monitoring. You need to waste less. And we need to take the city to task. And we need to tell them what needs to be done. Like you said, people know what needs to be done. We have that information. We're giving that to them. We sent it to the mayor. No response yet. I don't know.
And it boils down to what is infuriating me right now to say, if there's just one word to describe everything that you've just said is corruption. And I feel that later on in the interview, we must go into that. But let's not forget that we are also here for the people, like the ordinary people who are probably going to be activists and join WaterCan as well. And I'd like to know if there's anything, any problems you can highlight that they perhaps are not aware of, whether in Joburg, whether in KZN, just general water problems that you might think they're not aware of.
I think that people are becoming more aware, and it's because of an active civil society across the country. So I think what people don't know, and they always seem to be surprised when I tell them, is that government does a blue drop and green drop report every year. And we should be getting one in December, which we need to look at.
Is it coming out this year?
It should come out, yeah.
Okay.
The one thing is, it tells us that half of our drinking systems across South Africa is not good for consumption. That means it has bacteria in it. So you shouldn't drink water from, yeah.
I mean, we've been taught 8 glasses of water a day. Now it's like, are you sure about that?
Exactly. I mean, I think the issue that Nomsa mentioned about school kids now being either charged 5 rand or being told to bring water from home. But home doesn't have water either. So it is a challenge for learning. Young girls who are going through menstruation, they skip school because there's no water or no toilets at their schools. So you're having a generation of young people that are just staying at home when they're menstruating as if there's really something wrong with them.
Young girls.
Right?
Whose future is
jeopardized. And you know yes, exactly. You know the story of if you educate a mom or you educate a female, you educate a nation.
We are primary teachers,
right? You know,
by nature.
So that's the challenge. So I drink the water in the big cities, but outside of that, no. So you imagine all the South Africans living in all these parts of the country that are drinking the water, because what else can they do?
Yeah, because not everyone can afford to buy water. Sometimes you find old people, they stay alone. And there's Jojo tanks and there's water tankers that are coming to give people water. Those old people can't walk a distance or take a 20-liter bucket to go collect water.
Yeah.
So that is the problem.
These are people who are dependent on grants also.
And they're using their grants
to pay
the young guys in the streets because unemployment's high.
Mm-hmm.
So the young guys are like, no, mama, I'm not going to take it for free.
So there's so many socioeconomic issues that are interlinked to the subject. And Nomsa, also, I want you to take us through what an ordinary person in the rural areas, because you spoke about visiting the rural areas, what do they go through in communities where there's challenges around water? Like, take us through a day. I know she mentioned around young girls not being able to go to school. You also mentioned, you know, pensioners not affording. But what are other areas that we might overlook?
So you'll find that most of the time they don't have water. So they'll have to wake up early hours. I think in Joburg we call it the bucket system. So they'll have to wake up early hours in order for when the taps are running that time to go collect water, fill 20 buckets of water so that they have water during the day. Not only that, but if there's no taps running in the water, then they have to walk distance if there's water tankers for them to collect water. So those are very long queues, especially if you're old, you can't stand in that queue the whole day. I think that last week when I was dropping my son at my mother's place, I'll make an example. She stays, it's a plot, it's in the northwest. She stays in a farm. So she said, no, can you please go fill my gas before you go? Because electricity is on and off. So I went to there was a garage close by. We went to go fill the gas with my brother. When we got there, they said, no, your gas is very small. You can't fill water here. But at the back of the garage, there's like a township there. You can go there. There's a person who will be able to assist you. When we went there, I wanted to tell you the story. When we went there.
I'm glad you're telling us here.
When we went there, we don't know this area. And so we're scared. We're like, let's just be normal. When we get there, we're asking, where can we fill the gas? And like, no, go straight there. You'll see there's a place where they sell bunny chow just next door. When we get there, we find the wife. No, my husband is not here. He went to Randburg. He'll be back at 12. Like, no, it's 10 o'clock. I can't wait 2 hours. And she's like, no, around the corner, there's another one. But as we walk around, there's taps. The taps are locked. So there's
no running. Is this a township?
The taps are locked. You know those silver things where they close the tap and they lock it? Yeah. But you can see it's like communal taps. They're locked. But around blocks, there's like big JoJo tanks. But around the JoJo tanks, it's polluted. You know, it's dirty. And then when we got to the place where we fill the gas, there's a JoJo tank. There's ladies there, young kids, women. There's a line, 20 liters of buckets and bottles. Some are even sitting there and chit-chatting.
Waiting for?
Water. And they're all collecting water.
Are they and
No, I didn't. I'm showing my brother, I'm like, yo, I wonder if they are maintaining. And my son Lunga's like, yo, since you've been working for a water can.
Like water mafias or what? Are there people who are in charge of this water or something? Are they selling it?
No, they were collecting water because there's JoJo tanks everywhere in the community.
So what government does is they sometimes place JoJo tanks in areas like on street corners so that people can go there to fetch water. I'm guessing we need to check that out.
Yeah.
And it is the locking that was confusing.
Yeah, I don't know why the taps were locked.
Yes.
So so that's something we need to investigate.
Yeah, it is a story that really needs to be looked into.
Yeah, so I think your question, so kids as well, when we were filling there in that yard, the mother called, I think it was a 6 and a 7 year old. She gave them 5 liter bottles to go fill in that water. Like, oh, they're so used to this lifestyle.
Because with stories like this, before you know it, something else starts transpiring. Somebody now is in charge of the JoJo tank. Now people are paying for the water, or people are now being told you can only get 2 buckets a day. And these rules are unregulated. It's just random people who are just taking over. If it's not looked into and not dealt with at an infancy, I foresee so many future problems. I mean, you were told to almost wait for 2 hours for somebody who went to Randburg. What is that? What if you need the water immediately? You know what I'm saying? If we can talk about the Water Warrior Project, what are some of the things that you'd like to share about that program?
Water Warrior?
Yeah. It's like you're still contemplating on.
There's a lot, actually. I think with Water Warriors, we work mostly with, we have partners. We work with Joburg City Parks. We work with WESA. We work with, I think it's STEM clubs in Northern, in Eastern Cape as well as in Cape Town. So we work mostly with them.
National.
Yes. So those are our partners.
All right.
So what we do is we go around testing water around schools, mostly with the teachers and the students as well. I think the first time we did it, we went to Cape Town. We went to 5 different schools in a week to go train students on how to test water and upload the results on the website. This year, it was quite big because we had these other partners and we had about 95 schools that participated in the water testing. That's where we found out that more schools are drinking water that is contaminated with bacteria. We are looking at growing it. Next year, we are looking for 200 to 300 schools that will take part.
Okay, later on, I'm going to be asking you
that. So we
can also be a partner as Mobilize, because we're all about Mobilize, you know, taking out the word. Yeah, but Doctor, do you have any youth involved in these programs? And why is it important that the youth is also a part of these programs?
So I think that we do try to attract young people to our programs on different levels. So when we talk about the Water Warrior Project, it's specifically around schools, but we also deal with the citizen science activist groups and the community networks that are sometimes led by youth. Mm. So the one in Bekkestal, for example, the head of the organization there is 26 years old and he's leading it. He's leading, the foundation. They do a whole range of things besides water. They also look at how to get better services for people. They deal with food, you know, during difficult times. They try to establish soup kitchens and those kind of things. So there are a lot of young people that are taking on the water issue, especially because they see it as a right. And I think that the generation that we're in right now is very much about, this is my right and I should have it, which is a great thing. And so we're seeing a lot of, like even in Cape Town, we're dealing with a young group that's part of our community action network. And in terms of our long-term testers, we have a group called the long-term testers. This is also our Water Warrior program. Where across the country, we have about 45 people that, well, when I say people, it's organizations or people that test monthly for us across South Africa. And there are some very inspiring stories. Like we would train someone and they would then go and train in their village or in their community other young people and take young people to go and test and send us the pictures and tell us all the things that they are doing. So it becomes almost organic.
Even the students, university students.
It's what I call train the trainer.
It's you very
find the right
much,
person,
it's
they,
very much
they mobilize.
Yes. Ah.
This is me shouting out to us anyway. Namsa, when is the right time to ask for a testing kit?
Anytime.
It's water time.
Anytime. As long as you feel, as long as you think or you have suspicion that your water is contaminated and you want to test, you can give us a call or send us an email.
It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
And also, are there any clear signs of poor quality or symptoms one may experience in relation to bad water?
So just think of the from the environmental, from smelling it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like Ferial said, so when we were in Bloemfontein, we had people, when we were asking why they want to test their water, it was saying the smell of the water, it doesn't smell nice. The color of the water sometimes, it doesn't smell nice. So you also have, you'll collect water in a bucket. And then what they said is at the, like when they've completed the water at the bottom of the bucket, there'll be something like white or murky, but when they take it out and smell it, it smells really bad. So those are some of the signs why you would want to test your water.
And then this, and adding to that is the symptoms. So if you, so for example, you can get skin rashes from swimming in polluted water or infections because if it's really high bacteria and you're swimming in a river, you could get other bacteria and other infections. Also, ingesting it could lead to, you could have headaches or diarrhea or nausea. That could, and sometimes it's very hard to link it directly to the water, but you then do have to start thinking about this is a possibility if you see other people as well. Because sometimes your water could be clear like this, but it could have bacteria in it and you don't know.
No.
That's why you've got to test it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it becomes really worrying. But also what you can do is if you suspect you for bacteria, and you can boil your water at home and use that. There are ways to cleanse your water at home that would help you so that you stay safe.
Earlier on, we mentioned to our audience that we will touch again on corruption. I don't want us to, you know, let it just slide by because it's a very important topic, you know. Do you have perhaps things that we have water mafias? And what do you think about the likes of AfriForum that give out, you know, biased statements with regards to corruption around water? You know, I know you were very diplomatic earlier on. We're not saying they're stealing. Yes, okay, they're not stealing. But what is really happening with this water crisis?
So I was saying that about the 4 billion rand. So a very specific incident,
yes,
right? That there's no evidence of stealing.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms...
Yet.
Mm-hmm. I think it was used, it was mismanaged. So I would rather fall, it would rather falls under mismanagement. But in terms of corruption around our water, we need to look at the fact that the Department of Water and Sanitation was also one of the captured departments under state capture. The minister at that time, Minister Mokonyana, was not the cleanest minister we've ever had, and also led to the delay in the Lesotho Highlands Water Project Phase 2. So that delay has had ripple effects for all of us. It should have been completed, I think, 2019. It now will be completed in 2029. So it has had a direct effect on us, especially in Gauteng. Other types of corruption that has occurred and is occurring is, of course, through tenders,
mm-hmm.
where it's tenders for friends,
mm-hmm.
and people without the experience doing the kind of work that they claim that they can do. For example, 2 tenders were issued worth about 260 million to 20-something-year-olds. I'm not saying that 20-something-year-olds can't run a company. They can. We've seen lots of evidence of this, but they don't have evidence of it. They've never had a water tanker in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So now they get the contract for water tankers.
Mm.
And all they do is buy up smaller companies or contract smaller companies to then do this providing of water. We saw that in KZN and Eastern Cape, that the water tanker mafia was actually getting quite brazen. So they would break down infrastructure so that they can continue. So, you know, if there's a water outage, then the municipality contracts water tankers to provide water to people. Because according to the constitution, no person should go without water for longer than 7 days a mm-hmm. year. So it's a right that the municipality has to then provide water for people, right, mm-hmm. as an alternative. So they send out the contracts, they get the contracts, then they get the system working again. But the contractors don't want the system to work. So they break it again, so that they can keep getting the contract to feed water.
How ridiculous.
Exactly. So it's a real thing. It's something that's there and we need to be monitoring it. The construction mafia also plays a role, because I'll give you an example. There was a reservoir that was being built in Midrand. And, no, sorry, not Midrand, in another area. But the construction mafia went to them and said, you will not continue construction until you either give us a big chunk of this pie or employ our people or like all these kind of provisions. So it is something that's there, and there needs to be a bigger commitment from government to deal with it. So when the minister says, well, sorry, it wasn't the minister, the mayor says, no, there's no water mafia in Johannesburg. Show me the evidence you have. Why do you say that when everything else points to something else? So those are the kind of things, because there is vandalism. There is breaking of infrastructure, and those things are happening all the time. So yes, and then of course, so there's the water mafia, and then there's the normal kind of corruption that happens at government level, where someone official is getting a piece of the pie, or allowing their friends to get particular jobs or whatever. So it's real, but I'd like to believe that there's pushback. And the only way we can stop these kind of corrupt activities and the mafia is to make sure the government is open and transparent in all that they do.
And also, thank you for practicing what you preach, because we've seen in your interviews vocalizing some of these matters that you're discussing with us today, even as in social media, you know, calling out the mayor's office, you know, and sharing some of these issues that we are discussing today. What is really happening with the Joburg Water? What is really happening?
With Joburg Water, the entity, or Joburg Water, Joburg's water?
The entity.
So I think I tried to mention this earlier, is that they're not getting the budget that they need to function. There are good people in Joburg Water. Yes, they need more people. Yes, they need more teams. But they are very smart people. Their turnaround strategy is really good. They have no political buy-in to actually do what they need to do. And that is why we are calling for their budget to be ring-fenced and for their budget to be left alone. Stop sweeping that money. You can't function. If there was any business that could not pay 203 contractors, 666 million, you would be shut down. They cannot operate under this environment.
They can't.
So the city of Joburg, the mayor, the MMCs, premier, the president, the national government needs to find a way of making Joburg Water function and function well. Because right now their hands are tied.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. And maybe over to you, back to the people, also, is that what can people do when they discover that the water that they're drinking is not safe? What are some of the things that people can practice in their homes just to be safe around water? I know growing up, they used to say we must put a detergent. I can't remember.
Chick.
Yes. But also with that, nobody had told how much amount of it you should put, you know, since we're talking to marginalized communities. So just think of examples like that.
So they would need to boil the water. The first thing we do normally advise is boil your water first before you drink it. But if it smells really bad, you can't drink that. You'll need to test to determine what is causing your water to smell. So with Jik, I think you boil your water.
So we can put it...
put it to calm down and put
a lot.
One teaspoon of Jik into your water. Let it sit. Yeah, 20 liter. Let it sit for a while.
Okay, 1 spoon, 20 liters.
We try not to advise that too much. If you're desperate and that's what you need to do, then there's an amount.
The boiling option.
Because people put a cup. You could get very sick drinking Jik from a bucket with a cup in it. So it has to be very slight. So we try to do a double method. If you boil your water, and then if you're really not sure to do what Namjoon said.
Yeah, but recently with the school project we had, what we did is we provided the schools that had contaminated water with tablets to put into the 20-liter bucket. We had a company that approached us and said they'd like to assist. It's called Business Connect. So they give you like 10 tablets in one sachet. You take one tablet and put it into the 20-liter bucket before you drink.
Oh, okay. I think that is a much better option. And also, thank you for those who don't have the tablets yet. Just mentioning 20 liters, you know, 1 spoon at least, and then we get a clearer idea so that people can really be safe out there. And this is my favorite part as part of Mobilize, where I ask, how do we help, you know, the Water Can program or project? How do we mobilize people out there who want to partner with you, the young people that you spoke about, people in rural areas? How can we help?
You first.
They can get in contact with us.
All right.
Via email, or they can give us a call. So first thing we'll do is we'll have a meeting of understanding with them to understand what the problem is, and we'll take the next step in testing and guide them in what is it that they need to do.
Well, that is awesome. Do you want to add on that?
I do want to add, because there's that, but we also want to build the WaterCan network. So if people want to establish a WaterCan committee wherever they are, they need to get in touch with us. We're looking to build. We also need to get more funding.
Yeah.
This is something that we're struggling with.
Okay.
I love WaterCan. I think we both do. We're both passionate about it. We're nervous that we don't have enough funding that's going to take us beyond May at this point. We've been doing the funding applications. We've been wrecking our brains. And everyone's like, oh, very good project. But we're not getting the funding.
Mm.
So if people are out there and think that they would like to help that way, we'd be very happy to also speak to them.
Mm.
The challenge is both of us, like we said, we're activists.
Yeah.
So asking for money when I'm doing presentations is so hard. I just can't do it. But this feels like I'm speaking to you, and yeah. I'm not asking you for money.
Yeah.
But we're really looking for big donors. I think WaterCan is important.
It is.
It's very important.
I think the work we do is phenomenal.
Yes.
But the citizen science activism, the fact that we're getting national reach, we're now partnering, by the way, with probably an Australian university and Mexico to commemorate International Water Justice Day in January next year. So we're doing such great things. I just don't know why we're not getting the funding.
Yeah, and you know what? Donors, sponsors, if you're listening and you're looking for a project to donate in, this is one of the best projects you can ever donate in. We can't, you know, stop reiterating the fact that water is life. We need water to survive. Throughout the interviews, we've mentioned the importance of water. And once again, ladies, thank you so much for joining. Thank you for sharing your expertise from practical examples to, you know, figurative and theoretical examples. Everything that you said, we really much appreciate. And we believe that the audience at home, there are things that they're going to take practice on a day-to-day. But like you mentioned, that others can be in touch with you as well, you know, so that they can join in and be the change that they want to see. So there you have it. These awesome ladies have educated me. I now know the acronym to WaterCan, which is Community Action Network, which I will also commit to being a part of. And I hope you at home also can be committed to the program. See you on the next podcast. We look forward to reading your comments. So do share with us some of the water challenges that you have faced. But for now, it is myself, the team that I have behind the scenes, and the ever awesome ladies that join me, Dr. Adam and Miss Daele. We are saying goodbye for now. Thank you for watching the Mobilize podcast. You know where to find us.